Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. My name is Matt, and I am your host, and we're going to be live here for the next 88 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, we got some interesting things going on here. I am live in Brenham at the Real Gun Show in Brenham, and we've got a lot of action going on down here. And I also want to state to you up front, be honest with you, I am totally under the weather. My throat is not going to last. So I've got my awesome staff here ready to help me at a second's notice. So if you don't hear me talking, it's going to be one of my consultants or my IT guy or somebody like that. But we're going to make this thing work. And ladies and gentlemen, with this gun show down here in Brenham, we're down here because we want to be where the action is. There's a lot of action going on. There's guns being sold. I see cannons being sold, which is pretty wild. There's a gentleman here that comes to all these gun shows and always gets rid of his cannons. And what's cool about a cannon, who doesn't want a cannon in their front yard? That'd be great. Come and take that one, I'll tell you, okay? But ladies and gentlemen, let's go into this. I got an opinion about something here, and I've made it very clear before, and I'm going to state it again. But if you've been listening to me for a while, you should know my opinion about Penal Code 30-06 and Penal Code 30-07 signs. I don't like them. Let me be clear, though. Before open carry started, we only had to worry about Penal Code 30-06. That basically said that if you had a license to carry concealed, you could not enter the property with a concealed weapon. Now, with open carry laws, a person must post both signs, Penal Code 30-06 and Penal Code 30-07, to keep a license holder from entering a property with a handgun. A lot of people still aren't getting this. So to be even more precise, my beef now is with persons or entities that post both those signs. In my opinion, they should rename the signs. They should rename the signs to read, "You are now entering a victim disarmament zone," or for short, let's call it a VDZ, victim disarmament zone. That's what it is, everyone, a victim disarmament zone. You are broadcasting to the world, hey, you like that voice there? Hey, ain't no guns here. Come rob us, assault us, kill us, or whatever you like, because we won't be able to stop you. That is foolish, ignorant, and naive thinking. I want to read to you a short article stating what one person can do with a gun, and this is going to put a lump in your throat. So stand by for this. Here's the headline. It says, "Gun-carrying teacher bought students time in Pakistan attack." And I guess this is Tarsana, Pakistan. Listen up. When Islamic militants stormed the university campus in Pakistani town, chemistry professor Hamid Hassan was carrying a concealed pistol. Locking his students in the classroom, he opened fire on the assailants, buying his pupils enough time to escape before he was gunned down. The survival of Hussein's students in a massacre that left 20 others dead is a legacy of a bloodbath that targeted after another school in northwestern Pakistan 2 years earlier. After that 2014 attack in which 150 people, mostly children, were killed, the government trained educators to carry concealed weapons so they could be first line of defense, giving security forces time to react. Hussein was praised as a hero Thursday for his quick action. His students managed to get away as he single-handedly took on the militants during the assault Wednesday that killed 19 students and another professor and wounded 22. Now, I personally, whenever possible, will not give any business to those businesses posting the Penal Code 30-06 sign and the Penal Code 30-07 sign at the same time. I give my money to those who respect my rights. Everybody understood on that? Everybody understand where I'm coming from? You all know what I'm thinking, right? Hopefully you're thinking the same thing. But enough of that. Enough said. Let's move on. Let me give you some show highlights as to what's coming on the show today. And there's a lot of things happening here. Today's license to carry segment will cover Penal Code 4603 and Penal Code 46035, and that's the places weapons are prohibited. In this segment, I'll teach you how to easily remember where you can and cannot go with a handgun. Our NRA segment will go over three real stories from the American Rifleman's The Armed Citizens column. And from those stories, we will glean great information to help us in our task to be safe and be prepared. My pet section will cover tips and tricks in a wide variety of topics on how to not to die. Okay, that's a pretty cool thing. Tips and tricks on how not to die. I kind of like the title of that already. And later on this show, the topic of interest section will go over lumen as it pertains to flashlights' brightness. You know, there's a lot of confusion on lumens. It's a complex topic, and I could do a whole show on it, but I'm going to see if I can just touch on it a little bit to get your mouth watered on that. My gun training demo will point out the pros and cons of different places to open and conceal carry a weapon on your person, and this would be very interesting. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening, you can also check us out. We're Ustreaming, live streaming here on my website, aaronsgunshop.com. You might want to pay attention to that section because I'm going to be demonstrating it with the visual there as to where you can carry concealed or in the open and what are the pros and cons to doing it in the different places that you pick. So check that out. Now, my special guest today will be Senior Corporal Jimmy R. Morgan with the Department of Public Safety. And Trooper Morgan has his own radio show on a few different stations, and he's agreed to come on my show to discuss traffic stops and the license to carry individual. And this will be great information, so be sure to take some notes. And today I'll try very hard to leave some time for the WTF moment, the what the F moment, because this one's a doozy. Okay, so that's what's coming up. Let's go right now into license to carry, and let's tell you what's going on there. We're talking about Penal Code 4603 and Penal Code 46035, places weapons prohibited. Excuse me. This is a topic, once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't figured it out yet, I'm extremely under the weather. My voice is barely holding on. So if you have somebody else's voice come on, don't leave. Listen, I'm right next to the mic, giving cues and all that kind of stuff. But this is a topic that causes a lot of stress for the license to carry individual, Penal Code 4603 and 46035. A person with a license to carry in the eyes of the state is a high-level citizen. So what do I mean by that? Well, a person with a license to carry must be a law-abiding citizen, not one who owes any taxes or child support, is not chemically dependent, has not been convicted of a felony, is not currently charged with a felony or a misdemeanor, is not a fugitive from justice, and is able to legally buy a firearm for starters. Okay? So the person with a license to carry wants to carry legally as well. I mean, if you're a legal, law-abiding person, you want to do things right. And sometimes you may not know or it's confusing what it is or how to do it or what's the right way to go. It's just because you're getting 20 different answers. So this is going to bring us up to Penal Codes 4603 and 46035. Now, I'm going to make this very simple. People have a tendency to worry about each location as to whether you can go into that location with a license to carry or not. So what we're going to do, we're going to make it easy, and here's how we do it. Take some notes. I don't care what you're doing. Pencil, paper, pen and paper, notebooks, whatever you got. Take some notes here. The first thing is remember that all federal facilities are off limits. I mean, since that one's a no-brainer, ladies and gentlemen, I won't even put it into the equation. Just remember, all federal facilities are off limits. Number two is to remember the list I'm about to read to you and the places you can't go. And then three, everywhere else, just look for a sign. Let me recap that. That's like, remember that all federal facilities are off limits, period. Two, I'm going to read you a list of the places that you can't go. And then everywhere else, just look for the sign. So I'm going to read through it. Once again, get your note materials ready. And I'll recap it at the end here and put the icing on the cake, okay? So the first seven are going to be from Penal Code 4603, and the last three will be from Penal Code 46035. All right, here we go. Once again, everybody, just so you know, I'm a certified instructor with the state of Texas. I've been doing this for quite a long time. I've taught thousands of students. And we dot the I's and we cross the T's here at Aaron's Gun Shop. We want to make sure everything's right. So Penal Code Section 4603, places weapons prohibited. This section makes it an offense to possess or carry any weapon into the following place, even if the person is a license holder. Now I'm going to read it, and we're going to recap it, so don't worry about it. Number one, physical premises of a public or private school or institution, comma, you thought. Number two, grounds where a school-sponsored activity is being conducted, or passenger transportation vehicle of a school unless pursuant to written regulations or authorization of the institution. Three, premises of a polling place on election day or during early voting. Four, premises of a government court or offices used by court unless pursuant to written regulations or authorization of the court. Five, premises of a racetrack. Six, secured area of an airport. And seven, within 1,000 feet of an execution place on execution day. That would be Huntsville, right? That was seven of the 10 places that you can't go. I'm going to go to Penal Code 46035 now and read you the final three of the places that you can't go, and then we'll talk about all the others. Penal Code Section 46035, unlawful carry of a weapon by a license holder. This section makes it unlawful for a license holder to carry a handgun in the following situations. This will be number 8 on the list of 10. On the premises of a business that derives 51% or more of its income from the sale or service of alcoholic beverages for on-premise consumption as determined by the Alcoholic Beverage Commission. Number 9, on the premises where a high school, collegiate, or professional sporting or interscholastic event, say that 5 times fast, is taking place unless the license holders are participating in the event in which the handgun is used. And number 10, on the premises of a correctional facility. Duh. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. You've got 10 places that you can't go, and we're talking about federal facilities, but you can't even go there, and you got a list. Let me be clear here. Let me put the icing on the cake here. You have a license to carry, and people go, well, where, can I go in here? Can I go in there? Well, here's how you remember. If you remember number one, and that is all federal facilities, forget it. You can't go in there. And then you remember number two, and that is, what are the 10 places that are listed in the law book of 4603 and 46035? I just listed them to you. Whether they have a sign up or not, you can burn those places into memory. Then all you have to do is when you walk into a location is just look for a Penal Code 30-06 or a Penal Code 30-06 sign on the 30-07 sign on the door. That's how easy it is. No federal facilities are banned. Know the 10 places you can't go, whether they got a sign up or not, and everything else is you can go into unless they post a sign or somebody in person, a person in command or charge or ownership, verbally tells you that you can't go in there. Now, we teach all these things in our classes at Aaron's Gun Shop. So go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the License to Carry page or the CHL page, and sign yourself up for one of these classes. We'll go over these things in depth, okay? I would love to spend more time on it, but we're going to move on. So if you want to learn more and get more at ease with these laws, give us a call, sign up for the class, and we'll go into more depth. Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do is we're going to move on to our next segment, which is the NRA segment. And in this section, I'm going to read to you three stories from the NRA's Armed Citizens page of the American Rifleman. And hopefully from these true stories, we can learn what to do and what not to do, and maybe even get a laugh or two in the process. It's all going to depend on the story. Now, if you're not a member of the NRA, you might consider becoming one. The more gun supporters they have, the more muscle they have to stop bad legislation. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to read to you a few stories, and I'm going to have my assistant here on standby in case I can't finish these stories up. Excuse me. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do our NRA. Let me read to you story number one. This is from February 2016. What goes through the mind of an armed citizen when he or his family member is threatened? A North Carolina businessman who lived through that type of situation said he hated to have to kill a man, but said he couldn't take a chance because his wife was being chased by a gunman. The businessman, who describes himself as a gun collector and an experienced target shooter, has long kept a shotgun at his jewelry store. When three armed men came in one day in November and started smashing display cases and stealing merchandise, the store owner's wife ran to the back yelling, "Gun! Gun!" Her husband grabbed the gun, his shotgun, and had a fraction of a second to make a decision because one gunman was only 3 to 4 feet away. I'm glad he didn't fire before I did. I was afraid he might, the store owner said. The thief he shot was killed, but his two accomplices fled. Here's my commentary. Number one, what goes through the mind of an armed citizen with a huge question mark? In my opinion, either panic or steadfastness. The more training you do with your mind and your body when it comes to self-defense will greatly increase your chances of success. If you hesitate, you set yourself up for potential failure. And in a gunfight, time and distance is in very short supply, okay, as the story here clearly reveals. All right, let's go to story number two. Once again, February 2016. Halloween intruders got a surprise after they said trick or treat to an elderly couple and barged into the home. Even though the four real-life goblins were armed and had their victims outnumbered, the man who lived in the home responded under duress. With at least two of the would-be robbers pointing guns at him, the resident grabbed a registered handgun and he kept near his chair and fired. Although the shot only went into the ceiling, it scared the bad guys off. They dropped two of the guns, a rifle and a shotgun, and they had brought into the house and hightailed it out. Police took those guns as evidence and were searching for the suspects. Okay, here's my thoughts on this thing. The man responded under duress. If you're serious about protecting yourself and your family, you need to practice under duress. That is what my seminars are all about. To put you under duress, to find your weak spots, and once we find them, we figure out what we can do to enhance them. Not enhance the weak part of it, but overcome those weak spots. So we want to focus on them, overcome them, and become a better shooter and defender of our person and our homes. Okay, everybody, story number three. Road rage could have turned deadly had it not been for the fact that the man with the cooler head was an armed citizen. A 23-year-old Wisconsin man had been standing in a parking lot near the automotive goods store. When a black truck whizzed by him, he yelled at the driver to slow down. The truck's driver then threatened to shoot the man and began rummaging around something in his truck. The pedestrian revealed his own concealed weapon and told the driver that whatever he was planning wouldn't be worth it. The driver then fled the scene in his vehicle. My commentary. This is a clear-cut example of Penal Code 904, threat as justifiable force. Let me read to you Penal Code 904. Threat is justifiable force. The threat of force is justified when the use of force is justified by this chapter. For purposes of this section, a threat to cause death or serious bodily injury by the production of a weapon or otherwise, as long as the actor's purpose is limited to creating an apprehension that he will use deadly force if necessary, does not constitute the use of deadly force. So everybody, it's a crazy world out there. Be careful what you say and who you say it to, I guess. But if you want to learn these laws, which you need to if you want to carry concealed or open, sign up at AaronsGunShop.com. Go to the CHL page or the license to carry page, whatever's written up there. I can't remember. And we got a class date on February 6th. Starts at 2:30. There is room still available. Okay. What we're going to do right now, everybody, we're going to take a one-minute break. I'm going to check my voice and see if I can handle some more of this. And when we come back, we'll do a little promo, and then we'll get into our pep section. So we'll be back to you on the other side in about a minute.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. I'm Matt, your host. We're here live at the Real Gun Show in Brenham, Texas. Got a lot of tables set up here. Got a lot of people walking through, a lot of guns, I got cannons to the left of me here. I've seen this guy quite a bit here. He sells cannons all the time. People just love him. He builds them from scratch himself. From the wheels to the frames to the actual tubes himself, they look great, too. So if you're looking for a cannon for your front yard, come and take one from him. I'm sure he'll enjoy it. We're here in Brenham, the Real Gun Show. Aubrey is not around. Aubrey Sanders, the promoter, the manager of the show. Otherwise, I'd get him on here and say hello to y'all. But if I see him, I'll grab him. But ladies and gentlemen, your support of this radio show is greatly appreciated. And there's many ways to support this show. A monetary donation is always welcome. Becoming a sponsor is another great way to become part of the show, actually. Liking us on Facebook. We're so close to breaking 400. Go ahead and... if you're listening to me now and you have access to it, go ahead and like us on aaronsgunshop.com. And just click like. Let's break it. Keep surpassing that number. You can show up to our event. Give us moral support. Calling into the show adds your input and opens topics that we may not have discussed before. So if you like the show and would like it to continue and grow, your support is greatly appreciated. The Aaron's High Cap Adventure program is not just another talking head show either. The show gives that information that you can apply immediately for self-well-being. So go to aaronsgunshop.com and check out the entire site. Look at the pictures, read the testimonials, listen to the past shows via podcast, and together we can all make a difference. If you have any positive suggestions, please let us know. With your help, we can complete the show by growing to a full 2 hours, okay? So we're going to move on now to our pep section. And our pep section today is going to be preparedness. It's going to be preparedness eliminates panic as compared to practice eliminates panic. So pep can stand for both of those. But we're going to talk about today, and I've got one of my consultants here with me, Patty's with me. She's going to have to give me a break by reading what I was normally going to read to you. But I'll set you up, Patty. Say hi to everybody.
Hey, everybody.
There she is. Okay. Survival tips and tricks. These tips and tricks cover a diversified field. Normally, I'll take a tip or a trick and I'll expand upon it and go over it in detail. But what I liked about this list here was it was so diversified, and I just want to throw it out there. Some of them are kind of funny, to be honest with you. Instead of focusing on just one area, let's do a crash course on a handful of areas that we could possibly face one day unexpectedly. So, Patty, if you wouldn't mind being my voice today, I think we got a list of 13, and if time will permit it, yeah, I want you to start off with that. If time permits, we'll go through the whole thing. If not, I'll cut you short and let you know.
All right, Matt. We're going to start off with how not to die. Survival tips you must know. Some accidental deaths are unavoidable. You're at the wrong place, the wrong time, but most aren't. Staying alive requires recognizing danger, feeling fear, and reacting. Here's what you need to know to survive the bear attacks, the chainsaw accidents, and even the vengeful vending machines. Accidents are a leading cause of death among U.S. men 18 to 50 years old. Wake up, guys. Accounting for 37,000 of the roughly 148,000 annual fatalities. Some instances of unintentional death, to use the official term, are unavoidable. Like I said, wrong place, wrong time, but most aren't. Staying alive requires recognizing danger, feeling fear, and reacting, not overreacting. We interpret external cues from our subconscious fear centers very quickly, says a Harvard University professor, Arthur. Oh, how risky is it really? Trouble is, even smart, sober, experienced men can fail to register signals of an imminent threat. All right, number one, outsmart wildlife. If you've ever been there, don't say it. If you come face-to-face with a wild animal, the natural response is to bolt or run, but that can trigger the animal's predatory instinct. Example, on July 6, 2011, Brian Matayoshi, 57, and his wife Marilyn, 58, were hiking in Yellowstone National Park when they came upon a grizzly bear. Naturally, they fled, screaming. Brian was bitten and clawed to death. Marilyn, who had stopped and crouched behind a tree, was approached by the bear, but left unharmed.
I didn't make a comment to that, Patty. I remember there was a big dog on a big chain, and I bolted, and it broke the chain, and it bit me in my leg. And ever since that incident, when a dog charges me, I stand my ground. And most of the time, they back down, but that's not a guarantee.
Well, there's a stat here. It says, each year, 3 to 5 people are killed in North America in wild animal attacks, primarily by sharks and bears. Well, you can eliminate most of those.
Yeah.
You know, don't go in the water, stay out of the woods. But, okay, do avoid shark-infested waters, unless you're Andy Casagrande. As for bears, always carry repellent pepper spray when hiking. It can stop a charging bear from as much as 30 feet away. Make sure you're in the right upwind of that.
Yeah, that yeah. shark thing, I can never yeah. understand the concept of becoming part of the food chain.
Nope. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
To reduce the risk of an attack, give bears a chance to get out of your way. If it's a mama, you're not getting away, but you can try. Try to stay in the open. It says a manager of Alaska's McNeil River State Game Sanctuary, if you have to move through the thick brush, make noise by clapping and shouting. Is that a good thing to do for a bear? I mean, make noise?
I don't know. I've never been face-to-face with a bear. I don't want to be face-to-face with a bear. I do whatever I can to avoid being face-to-face with a bear.
Avoid the food chain, man.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's go on to number 2.
I think they're cute. I think they're very pretty animals, but not when they're up with their claws.
Not when they're after me.
That's
okay.
Right.
Number 2, don't mess with the vending machines.
This is funny.
Oh, my. Okay. You skip lunch. You need a snack. You insert money into a vending machine, press the buttons, and nothing comes out. You get mad. What do you do? What have you done with the vending machine? I've kicked the snot out of that thing, but, you know, I get fired. But vending machines caused 37 deaths between 1978 and 1995. We must outlaw them.
That would just be embarrassing.
We must outlaw them.
That's right.
We must outlaw them.
They're a terrorist threat.
I don't know how you get to be a part of the food chain of a vending machine. I don't get it.
Knowing my obituary is going to read, man dies trying to get Snickers bar out of a vending machine. You know, I just can't.
All right. The vending machines cause these deaths by crushing customers who rocked and toppled the dispensers. No recent stats exist because nobody will admit that, you know, their relative got crushed by a vending machine.
See? Okay, so
but the machines, they're still a danger. We must eliminate them. We must. All right. Somebody needs to bring that up in Congress or something.
Okay.
Eliminate them. All right. Next one. Keep it on the dirt.
This one's important.
Okay. On the morning of July 14, 2013, Taylor Fails, 20, turned left in his 2004 Yamaha Rhino ATV at a paved intersection near his Las Vegas area home. The high traction tire treads gripped the road and the vehicle flipped, ejecting Fails and his 22-year-old passenger. Fails died at the scene, but the passenger sustained minor injuries.
You can kind of compare that to like a motorcycle going on gravel. It just loses traction. Whereas the ATV gained its traction so much so with the nubby tires, you know? I think it's going to say that.
It says, here's a stat, that's one-third of fatal ATV accidents take place on paved roads. More than 300 people died in on-road ATV wrecks in 2011. We must eliminate this. We must
ladies and gentlemen, what we're trying to get at is that danger lies everywhere if you're not careful. We're not talking being paranoid. We're just being aware. So all we're doing is making awareness that, hey, oh, things can happen. Are you going to stop it? No, I wouldn't stop it either, but I would be aware.
No, but you need to pay attention to what's going on.
Yes.
And here's the do. Ride only off-road. The ATV is built for off-road. It says the tires are designed for traction on uneven ground and will behave unpredictably on pavement. In some cases, tires will grip enough to cause an ATV to flip, as in the recent Nevada incident. If you do cross a paved road, to continue on an approved trail, go straight across in first gear.
Now, any kid who's got an ATV and his mother heard this, they're going to hate us.
Yeah.
Mother's going to go, no paved roads, no.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
All right. Next one says, mow on the level.
This comes personal to me. I'm always mowing on an angle, so go ahead.
Whirring blades are the obvious hazard, but most lawnmower-related deaths result from riding mowers flipping over on a slope and crushing the drivers. Been there.
That happened to you?
Well, I had a job once where I mowed for a golf course, and they were always telling me, you need to stay off the embankments and stay out of this and stay out of that, and don't drive that thing like a tank. But I did. I didn't last long there. Stat, about 95 Americans are killed by riding mowers each year. Can you believe that? Dude.
I do actually believe it. I mean, because I know I'm mowing very steep slopes myself, and yeah. I know I'm aware of what I can do. I've done it before, so I'm familiar with that slope.
Yeah.
But if you're not, I'm sure it can happen.
Here's the do. Mow up and down a slope, not sideways along it. How steep is too steep? If you can't back up a slope, do not mow on it. I've never looked at it that way, but I guess that's a good thing. All right, next one says, don't hold your breath.
This one here, I'm a swimmer. I'm a competitive swimmer. I used to be. So go ahead and read it, and I'll explain it. It's real.
Okay. If you want to take a long swim underwater, the trick is to breathe in and out a few times and take a big gulp of air before you submerge, right? Wrong. Hyperventilating not only doesn't increase the oxygen in your blood, it also decreases the amount of CO2, the compound that informs the brain of the need to breathe. Without that natural signal, you may hold your breath until you pass out and drown. That is known as shallow water blackout. I have never heard of that.
Yes, I have heard of it a long time ago, and it does work. If you want to stay underwater a long time, there's a switch in your brain. And if you're able to switch it off, you can just stay underwater for almost ever until you pass out and die. And it's amazing.
Okay.
I was close to, I can't remember the length of time I'd be underwater, but you could tell. Your body just stopped worrying about oxygen. And sooner or later, you're going to pass out without realizing it. So you have to be careful with it.
Here's a stat. Drowning is the fifth largest cause of accidental death in the U.S. Water. We must eliminate it. Remember that. Okay. Claiming about 10 lives a day. No one knows how many of these are due to shallow water blackout, but its prevalence has led to the formation of advocacy groups. Of course, we have an advocacy group for them. Okay. Here's the don't. Hyperventilate before swimming underwater, and don't push yourself to stay submerged as long as possible. I think you can build up a tolerance.
You can.
Also.
You can, for sure, but yeah. There's that switch that goes off.
Okay. Next one, keep your footing. One mistake is responsible for about half of all ladder accidents. Carrying something while climbing. You know, ladders kind of scare me a little bit. I don't know why.
Well, they could be unstable if you don't have support. It's not a level ground. Especially if you put it on the grass, it's kind of muddy. And
I'm not on terra firma. I don't like that. Okay. More than 700 people die annually in falls from ladders and scaffolding. Ah, all right.
I think it's a lot has to do with people want to exert more energy on the tool they're using than the tool is capable of handling, whether it be a ladder or whatever. So you have to remember what the limitations of each tool is that you have.
All right, here is the do. Keep 3 points of contact while climbing. Use work belt hooks, a rope and a pulley, and other means to get items aloft. All right. Next one, ford carefully. That does not mean a vehicle. All right. A shallow stream can pack a surprising amount of force, making fording extremely dangerous.
That's fording, F-O-R-D.
Fording, correct.
Thank you.
All right.
Just clarifying.
Once you've been knocked off your feet, you can get dragged down by the weight of your gear, strike rocks in the water, or succumb to hypothermia. Water-related deaths outnumber all other fatalities in U.S. national parks. No specific statistics are available for accidents while fording streams. Fording streams are completely unnecessary. This is completely fixable. Just don't do it. Turn around, don't drown.
Unless you're military, but read the trick on how to determine.
Okay. Cross at a straight, wide section of water. Also stick into the current.
Okay, first of all, why do we do the wide section? Because it diversifies the, it disperses the currents.
Right.
Straight shot, quickest point from, from here to there is a straight line. And then the stick part is what?
Also stick into the current. If it moves faster than a walking pace, don't cross. Unhitch waist and sternum fasteners before crossing. A wet pack can pull you underwater.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've been around the block. I've been around the block a lot, and I've put myself in a whole bunch of different types of circumstances. And when you get water moving fast under your feet, it'll flip you on your rear end before you know it. So don't be misled when you think, oh, it's a pretty little stream. It may take you and knock you on your rear end. Be careful.
Well, to me, this is completely avoidable. Unless you just, like you said, military.
Don't drown, turn around.
You turn around, don't drown. All right. Next one, stay warm and dry. Cold is a deceptive menace. Most fatal hypothermia cases occur when it isn't excessively cold, from 30 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Wet clothes compound the effect of the temperature. Here's a stat for you. Hypothermia kills almost 1,000 people a year in the U.S. Cold, we must eliminate.
That's right.
It's a threat. Do wear synthetic or wool clothing, not moisture-trapping cotton. If stranded, conserve heat by stuffing your clothes or shelter with dry leaves.
I want to go over this one again because hypothermia, you always get this impression I got to go to Mount Everest to get hypothermia. You don't. That's why I wanted to read this one. It's because it's one of those things that can sneak up on you when you're not expecting it. Like, for example, if your undergarments are wet, it draws your body heat out. That's why, if you sweat during the day and you go to sleep, you always want to have a fresh pair of undergarments so that it's not drawing the heat from your body. Keep yourself warm.
Do you know the symptoms?
For hypothermia?
Yeah.
I think it's cold, isn't it?
No. How do you feel when this is happening to you? Can you think straight? I don't know.
Well, I'm sure there's different levels of it, but if you can understand that hypothermia is right around the corner. We're just touching on topics, but you're right. You need to learn about the different aspects of what can affect you in hypothermia, but be aware that it doesn't take that much to become hypothermic.
Right.
So just make sure you don't put yourself in that position.
Yeah. All right, next one. Let leaning trees stand. The motorized blade isn't always the most dangerous thing about using a chainsaw.
Now, let me make a comment on this one. I have a friend of mine who cuts trees, and they're always worried about weird things happening with trees. It's like a bullet. The bullet will go and bounce off 20 different ricochets, okay? You don't ever know what a bullet's going to do. Same thing with a tree.
You never know where that limb is going to land. Trees contain enormous amounts of energy that can release in ways both surprising and lethal. If a tree stands at an angle, it becomes top-heavy and transfers energy lower in the trunk. When sawed, it can shatter mid-cut and create a so-called barber chair. The fibers split vertically, and the rearward half pivots backward. It's very violent, and it's always quick, says the chief executive of New Jersey Arborists.
I remember watching this guy cutting this tree down that I had it over a building, and he was very methodical on how he was doing it. He had it planned out. He saw the angle of the tree. He knew where the cut was. He made the cuts right. Even so, when he did everything and checked his, crossed his T's, dotted his I's, the top part of the tree, when he cut it down, it twisted weird, almost took him out. So, you never know what a tree is going to do, so be careful on that.
It's a kind of a scary thing. I watched some folks cut a tree down one time, and it was a very tall tree, and it was so loud and so violent that you just really want to get away from it.
That's nature talking.
It's scary, yeah. All right, here's a stat. In 2012, 32 people died felling trees. 32 people.
32.
Okay. Here's a don't. Saw into any tree or limb that's under tension. So we would be talking about the twisted, the leaning, anything that's under tension.
Right.
Okay. Next one. climb with care. Accidental shootings are an obvious hazard of hunting. But guess what's just as bad? Trees. We must eliminate them. A tree stand hung 20 feet in the air should be treated like a loaded gun.
And I'm bringing this up because how many hunters we got here? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because it's every bit as dangerous. Says a lady with the National Bow Hunter Education Foundation. Most tree stand accidents occur while a hunter is climbing, she says. Here's a stat. About 100 hunters a year die falling from trees in the U.S. and Canada, a number equal to or exceeding firearm-related hunting deaths. You know, there was a lady 2, 3, 4 years ago that was climbing into the tree stand, and the thing broke out of the tree, and it flipped back, and her leg was hung in it, and it broke her leg, and she's hanging there. And her cell phone falls out on the ground. It's 20 feet. Her husband was on an ATV.
It's a Luke Skywalker.
Yeah,
thing,
and here he comes, and he hears her screaming at him. Her leg is broken, and she's hanging upside down. And, you know, if he had not heard her, what was she going to do?
Probably just stay there.
Or just hang there, you know? That's not good. Okay. Use a safety harness tethered to the tree when climbing. Instead of relying on wooden boards nailed to the tree, which can give way suddenly, I would suggest that before you climb into the tree stand, that you check it. Check the bolts, the nails, whatever you have it hooked up there with. That is an avoidable mistake. All right. Avoid cliffing out.
That's interesting, you know, because I would do this. And sometimes I say to myself, hey, you know, it's easy to go up, but it's not as easy to come down unless you know what you're doing. So tell everybody what you're doing
there. It is not easy to go down that cliff. It is easy to slide down on your rear end, sort of.
Time is ticking on this. We're going to finish up pretty quick. Read to us what that is.
Hikers out for a scramble may end up on an uncomfortably steep patch, and finding it easier to climb up than down, keep ascending until they cliff out, unable to go either forward or back. Spending a night freezing on a rock face waiting to be rescued is no fun, but the alternative is worse. It's also embarrassing, I would think. Here's a stat. Falls are one of the top three causes of death in the wilderness, along with cardiac arrest and drowning. Cliffed-out hikers account for 11% of all search and rescue calls in Yosemite National Park. All right. One more?
Let's do one more.
All right. Use generators safely. After Hurricane Sandy, many homeowners used portable generators to replace lost power, leaving the machines running overnight and allowing odorless carbon monoxide to waft inside. The gas induces dizziness, headaches, and nausea in people who are awake, but when people go to sleep with a generator running, there's no chance for them to realize that something's wrong. Carbon monoxide from consumer products, including portable generators, kills nearly 200 people a year. Of the Sandy-related deaths, 12 were due to carbon monoxide poisoning.
And what's sad is they're trying to be prepared, right?
Yes.
They're prepped and ready to go, but they missed the one point of carbon monoxide poisoning.
They missed it. Keep your generators more than 20 feet from a house. Or if you use them, open the door window once in a
while. All right. Well, look, everybody, we're going to stop right here. I can't thank Patty enough for helping me out here, being my voice. What we're going to do is, these are points that you should have written down, make some notes to, because they all apply to us at one point or another in our lives. And it's just good to know that there's potential threat out there. Although you may go out and say, oh, nothing's going to happen. Heck, it does happen, and there's stats showing that they do happen. So hopefully that made you aware of some things you might not have been aware of before. But, Paul, we're going to take a one-minute break real quick, and when we come back, I'm going to talk to you about Blackjack Firearms and what they got to offer. They're pretty busy right now. I was hoping to get them for an interview, but we might not be able to do that. So on the other side is commercial. We'll talk about it, and we'll see you on the other side.
What you do in training, you will do in real life. If you fail to train, you have trained to fail.
Aaron's Gun Shop and 25-yard indoor range is proud to present High Cap Adventures Concealed Carry Academy. Realistic training to prepare you for real-life events. Advanced shooting techniques, drawing from concealment, clearing malfunctions.
If you plan to carry a concealed handgun for self-defense, you must be proficient in these skills, period.
Also learn how to read body language and be aware of your surroundings.
Understand speed versus accuracy.
Call Aaron's Gun Shop now to enroll into one of their classes or to get more information. Call 254-697-4721 or toll free 888-2-BE-FREE or check them out on the web at aaronsgunshop.com.
Remember, in a life or death situation, failure is not an option.
Train for success. Call Aaron's Gun Shop now, 254-697-4721 or 888-2-BE-FREE. That's 888, the number 2-BE-FREE.
Welcome back, everybody. We're live here. This is the Aaron's Gun Shop High Cap Adventure Radio Program, and we're live here at Brenham, Texas, at the Real Gun Show. People are buying guns, trading guns, buying cannons. I keep talking about these cannons because they look so beautiful over here. If you're in the area and you're hearing our voice, come on into the Real Gun Show in Brenham, Texas, and you should be able to find it. It's where all the action's happening. Everything else is probably non-existent compared to what's happening over here. So come on and check us out. I'm sure you'll find something that you'll enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, though, I want to tell you something here. Lots of people wonder or doubt about their ability to function well in a seminar or a training session. That's not the problem. The problem is finding an instructor who knows what they're doing and who is able to convey those skills to his or her students. If you have any doubts about yourself, I want you to refer to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the testimonial page. You'll get to watch, listen, and read testimonials from prior students of ours stating they came in nervous, and at the end of the day, they craved more training and info. They all broke through the barrier of self-doubt and became empowered with the knowledge that they have, that they can use their weapon and function under stress. Remember, stress is very important to be able to overcome. If you wanted to take a weapons class but were too unsure to commit, I challenge you to review the testimonial page at aaronsgunshop.com. I'm telling you, you can do this. So go to aaronsgunshop.com now and go watch the videos. All right, now everybody, we're going to talk to you about Blackjack Firearms. Once again, John and Steve, they're friends of mine. They've got a gun business manufacturing guns, ARs, AKs, all that kind of stuff, Cerakote products. They live right across the road from me. I can't tell you how convenient that is. So I got guys who are building guns right across the street from me, and I've got a gun shop and a radio show that just makes a beautiful connection here. We can talk about all sorts of stuff. John is kicking some serious rear end over here, and I was going to have him over for an interview, but he's kind of busy. So what we're going to talk about was rifling and what's it for and what are the different types. And the different types, some of the different types are button, hammer forged, cut. I mean, I don't know what they represent. I'm not a rifle kind of guy. I'm the type of guy who takes a gun that's built and gets great reviews and uses it. And when it needs to be fixed, I bring it to a gunsmith, okay? So when it comes to certain things, I'm not a master at the explanation of it, but he would be, but he's not here at this time. So you got what is twist in relationship to rifling. There's gain twist or progressive twist. There's all sorts of things. But what I'm trying to get at is this. Blackjack Firearms does all sorts of good stuff. And I'll tell you what, John is walking over here right now, and I guess I'm going to throw him on real quick and see what he's got to say. John, get that mic on there. Let's talk. I was just telling everybody you weren't going to make it because you were doing so many gun sales.
Oh, yeah. We've been crazy over there today. It's been great. Love that today.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, we're only going to keep it for a few minutes.
Okay.
Because we just got off the track here. But I was telling everybody that we were talking about rifling, or we would have been talking about rifling. And I was going to say, what is rifling? What's it for? What are the different types? And I mentioned there's button, hammer, forge, cut. And I'm sure there's other ones, too.
Right.
And then what kind of AR barrels have different types of rifling, and what's the relationship compared to rifling? What can you tell me about that kind of stuff?
All right. Well, basically, rifling is grooves that are cut into the barrel at a spin to make the bullet spin. Think of it as spiraling a football. You know, if you throw a football and it doesn't spiral, it just kind of looks like a wounded duck out there, and it's not accurate. But if you get a good spiral on it, you can get a long range, and it's very accurate. So that's what you're doing with a bullet. Rifling is measured by how many twists it makes per inch of length of barrel.
Clarify that.
Okay.
If you got an AR barrel, there's three different...
For the 5.56, you generally have 1 in 7, which means it makes one complete twist every 7 inches of barrel. You have 1 in 9, which is one for every 9 inches, and those are the two most common barrels. There's also 1 in 8, okay? The reason the 1 in 7 and 1 in 9 are the most common is that's the ones the military used when they first adopted the 5.56 with the 55-grain bullet. They went with a 1 in 9 twist. When they went to the 62-grain bullet, they went to the 1 in 7 twist. But basically, with 5.56, the lighter the bullet, the longer the twist you want.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Everybody knows the confusion of way in the beginning that the air was great and then it got jacked up and then they got it fixed again. But what was the problem with that? What was it originally supposed to be? You got a rifling.
So originally, the original M16, I think, actually had like a 1 in 10 twist because it was firing a heavier bullet, and then as they went, a very light bullet, and then as they added weight to the bullet, it wouldn't be stable enough.
Okay.
So they had to make it a faster twist.
I'll tell you what, the AR has come a long way. It's a fantastic rifle now. I remember back in the day, it's just like, you know, people would look at it with an eyebrow raised and say, what the hell, but now it's a pretty good weapon.
Right.
Go ahead.
So, so it depends on, like, if you're going to do a 300 blackout, most of the 300 blackout barrels I'm seeing are like a 1 in 10 twist. So it just depends on the caliber you're going to get as to what you're going to, what twist rate you're going to get.
What can you say about the types of rifling? When I was making that comment,
you got
about,
the button and the...
Yeah, what's the difference in those? The way it's made?
It's all different ways that they pull the device or push the device through. Like a hammer forge, they're actually pushing a device through that twists the rifling in. A button, they're actually pull the device through. I've read people that, you know, all one way or the other. But most gun experts, I've actually, you know, people who I trust as gun experts, actually say there is no difference.
Do you know anything about the Glock rifling, where it's, I guess, not, the rifling doesn't go all the way to the chamber? Something about that? Do you understand what the process is like that?
Glock and HK pretty much do that. And it's...
Because I know they say because of that rifle, you don't want to use lead bullets. You want to have definitely jacketed type of bullets or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think the whole concept is that the rifling is, you got a little area for the bullet to start before it hits the rifling and starts twisting.
Well, I'll tell you what, they're a little confusing anyway, because the Glock says they got 3 safeties on the gun. I'm like, what? Your finger's the safety. But anyway, keep going.
So,
the barrel length, doesn't that have a lot to do with the rifle twist? Because, like, if you've got a standard long barrel, 20-inch barrel rifle, isn't that a standard 1 in 7?
Yeah, the standard is 1 in 7 nowadays.
But now if you go to a 16, let's say you got that same gun, but it's not a 16-inch barrel.
Most of the 16s I see, most people are putting 1 in 9s on
it. Why is that, though? Is that because the shortness of the barrel causes it not to get enough spin to stabilize it?
Yeah, I mean, there's that you're also, the bullet's not flying as fast when it comes out of the barrel.
Because none of powder burn.
Right, when you've got that 4 inches difference in barrel drops the speed. Everybody says, oh, the 5.56 flies at over 3,000 feet per second. Yeah, out of a 20-inch barrel. Out of a 16-inch barrel, flying at about 2,600 to 2,700 feet per second.
Still fast, but
you need a little difference in the twist of the barrel.
Yeah, you'll notice pistol, when you shoot a pistol, you'll see all the particulate come out of gunpowder, unburned powder. When you're a rifle, a 20-inch barrel or more, you have a very small signature at the end because all the powder gets burned up. So
right.
The length of the barrel just ensures the burn of the powder. All right, John, you got anything special going on here?
We've got, I'm buying and selling. I mean, we're doing a lot of that today. We've got
too much going on. You can't even talk straight.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know where to start, right?
Yeah. I've got a lot on my table today, so if you want to come on out. Yeah, today and tomorrow we'll be here. Next week, Steve will be over at the... Real Gun Show at the Lake Conroe.
Lake Conroe, okay. So, Real Gun Show at Lake Conroe, and Blackjack Firearms will be there. If you want to check out what John or Steve got going on, go to pjfirearms.biz. Everybody, I'm telling you, they've built a lot of stuff for me. They fixed a lot of things for me. They accessorized a lot of things for me. I'm very happy with what they do for me. and I think you will be too. So go to BJFirearms.biz. It's Blackjack Firearms at BJFirearms.biz. Give them a like or two, and give me a like or two, too. All right, John, I appreciate your time. I know you're busy. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
All right, Paul, here's what we're going to do, buddy. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back from the break, I'm going to have my special guest on, Senior Corporal Jimmy Morgan from the DPS, and we're going to be going over license to carry, traffic stops, and anything that may pertain in that particular field of conversation. So we're going to see you on the other side, everybody, in just a couple minutes, and we'll see you then. Paul, go ahead, buddy. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. We're live here in Brenham, Texas, at the Real Gun Show. We're having a good time, having lots of fun. And I've got a special guest here, Senior Corporal Jimmy Morgan from the Department of Public Safety. Jimmy likes me so much that 20-something years ago, he wanted my autograph. And I was, like, so happy to give it, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, but anyway.
You said I stopped you.
Yeah, well, I was in violation of the law.
But I did. Oh, so you're. I did stop. I didn't know that.
You did stop me yesterday. You got my autograph, too.
Well, you know, you stick around long enough. Come back.
All right, everybody. Let me tell you a little about Senior Corporal Jimmy Morgan here. He's got 27 years with the Department of Public Safety. Trooper Morgan started his career with the department as state trooper in Grovetown, Texas, in March 1989 after graduating the B. 1988 recruit trooper in Grovetown. What does that mean, B?
Yeah, it's a B. Yeah. So, like, this year we're going to have four academies.
Oh, so that's
particular way, I had an A and a B, we had two academies.
Gotcha.
Year.
Okay, you technically term it like that. Okay.
Yeah.
May of 1991, he transferred to Cameron. In 1993, he gave me a ticket. Texas.
Could you write it off your taxes?
It's my fault.
Okay.
I'm guilty. Okay. Texas, and remained in Milan County as a state trooper until transferring to Bryan as the new safety education trooper on December 1st, 2008. While in Milam County, Trooper Morgan started a weekly radio program at KMIL called Let's Talk Traffic to educate Texas motorists about traffic, criminal laws, and highway safety. Now, after 7 years as a safety education trooper and TIO?
Yes, public information officer.
Thank you, sir. I should have known that.
Sure.
Trooper Morgan has expanded his talk radio program to cover most of Central Texas, which is impressive. They include KMIL Radio in Cameron, KXRT Radio in Rockdale, KWHI Radio in Brenham, and KMVL Radio in Madisonville. So with no further ado, Senior Corporal Trooper Morgan, welcome to the show.
Well, sure.
I'm glad you can make it.
Yeah. Actually, it's part of my district, so well, just good. Down here on Thursday.
I hope I didn't take you out of your...
No. I didn't know what... I thought I might do some things after this show, so I just drove on down my pick-em-up truck and probably going to get with the sheriff later on.
Well, very good. I'm glad you can make it. Sure. I think there's going to be a lot of information here that we're going to talk about that could be useful for the license to carry individual.
Yes.
But first, can I call you Jimmy?
Sure. Absolutely.
Jimmy, the first thing I want to do is I remember listening to you a long time ago, Let's Talk Traffic, when you first started out. Tell me what motivated you to do that show, and then you're doing this out of your own pocket in the beginning, right?
Well, no, the department, I was being paid by the department. It's just one of the hours I spent on the radio just sit on the highway. So the idea actually came from a friend of mine that was at KMIL, Rob Reed. We coached together baseball. And him being in the radio business, me being the trooper business, we often talked about certain laws, certain things that people did or didn't know, or Joe Bubba told them in the bar, you know,
that's right.
And they want to know what's part of his truth. So we talked about that, and he said, you know, we somehow together we came up with the idea, well, let's just get on the radio and see if we can straighten some of this stuff out.
You think about it, though. If you're asking questions, how many, you and I are average Joes.
Yeah.
How many average Joes are out there?
Plenty.
So if you're asking the
There's
questions.
There's 27 million right now.
So if you're asking a question, they got it, too. So this is going to be great.
Right.
All right, so you got started out. Then how did you get to expand on all these other shows?
Well, obviously, as a trooper, I mean, that's the main part of my job. And the radio is just a minor fraction of that, you know. But as the position of the Safety Education Public Information Officer came up in Bryan, I put in for it, and I was actually selected as the next PIO for the Bryan District. So, and now that's my main bread and butter is going around educating citizens, doing conferences or whatever it needs to be done, and it allowed me to expand, go around my district, and I wanted to cover all of my districts, so I went around to these other radio stations and some didn't really know what it was, but obviously they...
I can't imagine them walking on it.
Well, if you listen to the Super Bowl, right, and they pay for advertising, it's expensive. So I understand how radio works as far as sponsorships and all that. So so I knew it was going to be hard to break in some of these early morning talk shows that some stations already have going. And so I'm not exactly where I want to be. I actually want to expand more. I wish I had the whole state. But I'll take my district right now. I basically made some copies of some of my talk programs, and I submitted them and allowed them to listen to it so they understood how the program works.
Sure, yeah.
And then we went on from there. So I'm up to four now.
Well, that's great. So you get a lot. I remember you invited me onto your show, right, and you were getting calls in. Some of them were kind of awkward calls.
Yeah. Well, it just, if you have multiple kind of people following, and they may call about the garage sale that they had earlier, hour earlier or something like that. So
okay.
I'll answer them too, by the way. So I'm pretty easy, you know.
There's still good calls. Good calls.
Okay.
Let's get into this here. Let me ask you an important question. At Trooper Morgan, we're talking Trooper Morgan here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an instructor, right, for CHL, license to carry. And I'm always telling my students, respect on a traffic stop, okay? Respect is vital. Whether or not, look, you're a professional. A guy who wears a badge is a professional. We should be professionals. Doesn't matter how bad your last stop was, you should come up to the next guy. And even if you're rough, it doesn't matter. The guy behind the steering wheel needs to show respect to the badge. I understand when there's problems with a bad guy wearing a badge. You get those attitudes, okay? But it doesn't matter. You should maintain your respect. Now, I also tell these people there's certain ways, certain things to do when you get pulled over. But on this particular question, what I want to ask you is this. In the law, it says if you've got a license to carry, there's two ways to go about it. If you're licensed to carry and have the gun on you at the time, or a license to carry and don't have the gun on you at the time. So I want to preface it like this. If a law enforcement officer asks for any form of ID, a licensed to carry person is obligated to show driver's license and license to carry if the gun is on their person or about their person.
Right.
But doesn't have to if it's not. That causes problems. Can you talk to me about that?
Well, it can. But look, in my whole career, which I spent 20 years on the highway, arresting a lot of bad people. But there's one thing when I walked up, not to be offended or anything, but when I walk up to a car, especially this day and time, you have to assume somebody may have a gun in the car.
So
your approach, your thinking, and the interesting thing about law enforcement, you're having to make split seconds decisions. Bad guy, good guy, what's going on in the car? Is my weapon need to be out? Do I need to, so you're running all this for just seconds. So, people need to be reminded of that because we really don't know who we're stopping. People think we do, but we don't. We stop a violation of law. So
let's clarify that before you go any further.
Mm-hmm.
You pull the car over and pull the plates, you may know the owner of the car. The owner of the car may not be driving the car.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's absolutely correct. So when we identify and greet the person, we're going to ask and we're going to tell them who we are, and we're basically going to tell them why they've been stopped. And two things we're going to do. We're going to identify the driver and check the condition of the driver in the vehicle. And doing that, we're going to ask for a driver license. Now, some people I've stopped over the years that were licensed to carry, but when we run their driver license, it's going to alert us if you are or not. So if you didn't offer up, when we come back to the car, we may ask, hey, I understand you're concealed handgun. Are you carrying today or whatever? And most people say, well, I would have gave you my card, but I'm not carrying today. And I'm cool with that. But just to kind of let the officer know, hey, look, I know you got me stopped here, but I'm going to give you, for me and your safety, I'm going to let you know. I don't have a weapon with me today, but I am licensed to carry.
That's what I teach.
And another thing is hand placement is the most vital thing that a person can do. You don't want to be digging around your glove box and other places in your car. Maybe it's your insurance you're looking for. We don't know what you're looking for, or it may be a gun. So I always tell people on your insurance, your registration, that stuff needs to be atop your visor. And I like that because even when you go to reach for it, I can still see your hand instead of you having to reach and look. It's always the last document that you'll ever find when you really need to find it. Is that, I mean, you've been everywhere.
Always have it.
So, and by the way, while I'm sitting there waiting on you, there's some things going on behind me. And you can feel them, too. Uh-huh. Some people move over, some don't. So that's why you see now a lot of officer passenger side approaches, because when I got my first in-car video sponsored by the Rotary and Lions Club there in Cameron in 1993, before my department even started coming out with video cameras, because I wanted to be able to show people what I was testifying to. You don't, you know, and so, but watching these videos over the year, we have educated ourselves thinking, you know, we used to do it this way, but watching these videos, there might be a better way of doing this. And so you'll see now a lot of officers doing passenger approach, especially if the volume of traffic and the narrowness of the roadway. There's a lot of things that go into factor there, whether that trooper does that or not. And it may determine what else is going on in the car, whether it goes passenger side approach or the driver's side. So that is some of the things that the officer considers. But the main thing, keep your hands still. Let the officer come up. He'll tell you why you got to stop. Don't be yelling at the window. I wasn't speeding. Well, he probably stopped you because your license plate went on the front bumper, or you're missing something. Maybe you got a light out or whatever. It's not all about speed. But that's just some of the advice I can give.
I got a question. You touched a whole bunch of stuff here, so let's see if we can. I'm sorry. Let's see if we can nitpick it here. I tell people when they get pulled over, this is what I would do to police officer or trooper at ease or deputy at ease, whatever. I'll pull over. I'll roll down my windows. I'll turn my dome light on if I have to, if it's dark. Keys, ignition's off, keys on the dash, my hands are on the steering wheel. And when the officer comes up, I say, "Officer, hi, I'm licensed to carry. I do have the weapon on me at this time, in the center console, in my wallet, in my left rear pocket. What would you like me to do, sir?" And that seems to put them at ease. Right. I got a question, though, about women. It's dark. It's 3 o'clock in the morning,
right,
and they got a cop pull up, and they're nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy, what will you put up with from a nervous woman who's afraid to roll down her window?
Well, I can't sit here and tell you I don't keep in consideration, but, you know, we tend to treat everybody the same. And it's whether you're a woman or a man, if you need to get out, we need to get you out of the car because of safety reasons, we're going to do that. It's nothing, so women do not need to take that offensive. We're usually doing that for safety, and most officers will tell you, hey, look, there's a lot of traffic coming out. Can I get you to step out of the car for a minute so I can visit, so we're both safe out here? So they'll usually tell you that, but we tend to treat the violators the same. And
I was more meaning a woman's not sure if you let's say.
Oh, okay. Well, you're talking about women are always concerned about, is this guy really an officer?
Correct.
Is that what you're going to?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, and that's happened in my career. But most of these people they tend to be, their cars are not marked. They don't have their regular emergency lighting equipment. The officer tends to be generic, maybe some blue jeans, a white shirt or whatever. When DPS stops you, trust me, there is no doubt who you're getting stopped by. Now, if there is, you need to let me know what that is, but, I assure you, because our cars are well marked, we got the IDs, The question would be, if you get approached by somebody, you can roll your window. You don't have to be all the way down, but you can roll it halfway down and talk to them with your doors locked. And especially if you see somebody pull you over in a pickup truck with a Kojak light. Now, that right there should alarm you. Now, I'm going to sit here and tell you, back in some parts of Texas, that may be a constable. Who knows? Or some other type of law enforcement.
Okay, so let's say that is the case. Mm-hmm. You know, you're where I'm going? Like,
right.
How does one say, I don't know, you let yourself vulnerable, and then you get yourself into more trouble because you're refusing to
see? If you think you have to leave for your safety, you leave and you call 911 and say, look, I stopped, but this guy did not look real. The truck, he was in a truck, whatever. And because you're letting them know, I'm not running. So they'll have that document. I'm not running. I just need somebody to come out here and mark you in or tell me what I need to do.
Okay.
And they'll know pretty quick. And then if they think something's going on, they're certainly going to send another unit somewhere in the area and get this guy to make sure who this guy is. So
okay. I asked that question because I get a lot of women who ask
you
that.
So, but, I mean, and remind yourself, there is no correct answer for every instance that may happen. I think that's a decision that a person needs to articulate, that this is what I saw. this was the time of night it was. I didn't think Huey, you know, he didn't look genuine to me, so this is what I did, and I called 911 and to alert the dispatch. So I think that's the best thing you can do, and get to a lighted place and let them know where you're going to be and keep them on the phone.
Okay.
And remind them, so I am not running. I'm just going to tell you right now. But somebody needs to get here and make sure, because this guy, I don't think who he says he is. Okay.
It's going to happen, like, rare to never,
yes,
probably.
Yes,
but
yes.
Ask a lot,
sure,
of questions.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Jimmy, what about if an officer wants to inspect the vehicle?
Mm-hmm.
You always hear these people say, well, I didn't do anything. I don't want him to inspect my vehicle. Mm-hmm. But let's say you know he's got the gun in the car,
mm-hmm,
and if the officer reasonably believes for the protection of himself and somebody else, I guess they can go in there. Can you expand upon that?
Well, again, I can't talk for every law enforcement department, but I will say this. Whether it's asking somebody to get out of the car, whether it's asking somebody to search the car, and a peace officer has to be able to articulate why he's doing what he's doing. Just to ask somebody to search the car for the heck of it is not the way to go. If an officer sees maybe some criminal activity, signs of that in the car, he may smell an odor or something, your license or not, or kind of jacked up or something like that. So there's a lot of things going on, and he's got to make that determination. Do I keep you in the car, or do I get out of the car? And do I need a search warrant, or are you going to give me permission to search your car? And you're basing on that because some things that you've seen as a police officer.
Well, let me pinpoint this question a little bit more direct. What I'm trying to get at was this. If you pull them over and you know they're licensed to carry,
mm-hmm,
is there any reason why an officer would want to have access to the weapon, take possession of the weapon?
He's going to find out where the weapon's at. And you say glove box or whatever, you can say, all right, let's leave it there, and let's step outside of the vehicle and kind of separate you from the weapon. Now, if you have it on you, then he gets you out of the car. If the contact's going good, everything's smooth, he's probably going to let you just keep it wherever it's at. If there's some other things going on with the contact, then he may decide to disarm you at that point.
Perception.
And that's going to be left up to the officer.
Yeah, perception of threat.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. Hey, Paul, we're going to take a quick one-minute break, and we're going to come back with Trooper Morgan, and we're going to finish up on a couple other topics here. And we've got a lot of good information going on here. I just want to reorganize my notes. So, Paul, let's get back to that in a minute.
What you do in training, you will do in real life. If you fail to train, you have trained to fail.
Aaron's Gun Shop and 25-Yard Indoor Range is proud to present High Cap Adventures Concealed Carry Academy. Realistic training to prepare you for real-life events. Advanced shooting techniques, drawing from concealment, clearing malfunctions.
If you plan to carry a concealed handgun for self-defense, you must be proficient in these skills, period.
Also learn how to read body language and be aware of your surroundings.
Understand speed versus accuracy.
Call Aaron's Gun Shop now to enroll in one of their classes or to get more information. Call 254-697-4721 or toll free 888-2-BE-FREE or check them out on the web at aaronsgunshop.com.
Remember, in a life or death situation, failure is not an option.
Train for success. Call Aaron's Gun Shop now, 254-697-4721 or 888-2-BE-FREE. That's 888-2-BE-FREE.
Welcome back, everybody, to Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. We're here live in Brenham, Texas at the Real Gun Show, and we're having a good time. Lots of people, lots of guns, lots of fun, and we're talking here with Senior Corporal Jimmy Morgan from the Department of Public Safety, and he's been going over a lot of great information. And we took a quick break just to reorganize. We wanted to make sure that we didn't miss anything. And I think what we're going to do, Jimmy, I want to just recap on some of the things that you don't want to do, because I'm a person who reads body language.
Right.
And I tell people all the time, I've thought about becoming an officer a lot. Okay, I'm ex-military and all that kind of stuff, but I was going to become...
I noticed your slant approach there,
yeah,
when we're
sure.
sitting there talking. That's kind of defensive, by the way.
I'm sorry. <It's all kind> of... But anyway, I watch your body language,
yeah,
so
yeah.
When I say, you know, hey, I can't open, I'm
yeah,
open.
Okay.
So what are some of the do's and the don'ts that puts you, the trooper, on the beat, okay, at the stop, that puts you at ease? What should we not be doing?
Well, first of all, let me kind of go through back to the officer and then to the traffic stop. Most officers, what they're going to do when they're enforcing traffic laws, they're going to try to get you stopped in a safe area. So I have people say, well, why did you follow me so long before you stopped? You always hear that every now and then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well,
I've seen that too.
Yeah. Well, you know, so if I know there's a shoulder down the road, or you're going to or another road that has less traffic, I may wait, and you got a signal on, I may wait till you pull off on that road. Or if I'm in a construction zone or something like that, the roads. So there's all kind of factors going on with that. So he's going to try to make it the safest spot he can to get you pulled over. Again, I've talked about approaches. He's going to make that determination, amount of traffic, what's going on in the vehicle, whatever. He may do driver side, passenger side approach. You just got to remember that you ought to be thinking, look, I'm going to keep my hands still, but I know he's going to ask me for my driver license, my insurance. You may want to be kind of thinking with that, not thinking there, I'm fixing to scream at this officer because you think he's got you stopped for speeding, it turns out to be something else.
Let me pause you for a second. You brought something up. I tell people, don't move around when you're in the vehicle. Mm-hmm. When the officer sees you and he's tagging you, he's going to, like, pull you over. The last thing he wants to see is weird movements in the vehicle, right? So what somebody's thinking is, well, let me get my wallet out real quick, and they see him go into a hip holster or something like that.
Well, let's talk about the car, because you notice there's a lot of window tint going on with vehicles.
Yes.
That is not law enforcement friendly, trust me. And we allow some dark tint. Matter of fact, we check 25% on both driver's side and passenger side, and the other parts can be dark, and as long as they have the side mirrors. Now, at nighttime, I can tell you right now, you're not seeing very well inside of a car. So when you say roll down a window, that's going to assist the officer looking where you can see your hands. So if you get stopped at night, don't be offended if the takedown lights are beaming up your car and you're trying to adjust your mirror because you're getting blinded. Well, what he's trying to do, he's trying to penetrate and make sure he can see what you're doing and see how many other people may be in the car. I had a stop early in my career while I was stationed in Cameron where I did a passenger side approach, and I saw the two guys in the front, but there was actually a third guy laying down, laying on top of a pistol. Now, if that don't, because the car had window tint on top of that, so if that doesn't get your attention,
yeah, I bet.
Whatever. So there's some of that stuff going on. So especially if you have the window tint, you know, rolling the windows down does assist the officer in doing that.
I mean, I'm so irritated with this because it affects the license to carry. I'm concerned about the law enforcement.
Right.
I'm very pro law enforcement.
Right.
And I'm also pro license to carry. So when a person licensed to carry does something stupid,
right? Which y'all hadn't done that yet. I mean, if you think about it, I asked this trivia question the other day. What was the first state in the United States that had some type of license to carry? The state was Georgia, and it was 1976. And the way we were kind of acting in Texas when this all came out, thinking, man, we're like one of the first few states to do this kind of thing. Then we find out we're the 45th state, right? I'm thinking, wow. I'm sitting here going, okay, I didn't know. But I did know this. I do know that in 1995, the same worries that we're having now with open carry, we had in 1995. And what have we found out on that?
Ain't no big deal.
We're finding out, first of all, you're going to have to be a pretty good citizen to even get a license to carry. That's number one. And people are wanting to carry for their protection and their family and their property. So that's the kind of people that are getting licensed. It's not the bank robbers. It's not the people doing the burglars. They don't want any kind of identification or you to know who even they are.
And they're not going to listen to a freaking sign posted up on the wall.
They're going to get, the officer that was shot and trying to take one of the states not too long ago was actually a stolen firearm from another officer years ago they had. So, again, they're going to get their weapons any way they can. They're not going to show up here at a gun sale and fill out documentation. They're just not going to do that.
That's right.
The weapons they normally have are probably stolen weapons.
Oh, very good. Well, you're a plethora of information, Jimmy. Look, we're going to cap this off in about 60 seconds here.
What?
Is there anything you want to follow? Why don't you give us an idea of how people can get to listen to you?
Well, you know, I'm in Brenham here twice a month at KWHI, 1280 AM. That's a 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock program. Craig Montana is the DJ for that program, does an excellent job. Everything is good here, which that station here reaches somewhere around 12 counties. I hear they can hear me down at the Galleria down in Houston. So it's been a good program here. We got good listeners, good questions. I had a CVE trooper on the other day talking about lots and weights, commercial vehicles and all that stuff. So I like to have guests such as yourself on my programs to educate people, whether it's driver license to weight questions, just whatever's going on. Anything about safety on the highway, things that people I think when they want to know, that's the kind of people.
Well, it's a great service you're providing. Yeah, I appreciate you doing that. All right, everybody. This is Senior Corporal Trooper Jimmy Morgan. Excuse me. And I had a great time talking to you, Jimmy, and I hope you can come on again. I'm not going to shake your hand because I just coughed on you. But I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Hang tight. You know, buy us a couple guns or something, and we'll talk to you about
it. The taser's looking good. I might get one for my daughter.
All right. Well, don't try it on me, okay? All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to move on to we're going to finish up with a WTF moment. I think you're going to enjoy this here. And I saw this, and this is a major capital WTF here. Let me read to you the headline. Let me see how much time I got. Okay, we got enough time here. City demands firearm applicants write essay explaining a need for a gun. Let me read that again because you're probably all standing there with your mouth open. City demands firearm applicants write essay explaining the need for a gun. This is posted by Adon Salazar. And I'll read it. A new policy in a Massachusetts town imposes burdensome steps on residents who want to obtain a license to carry a firearm, an essay exam, and an $1,100 training seminar. Can you say WTF? Pro-firearm supporters in Lowell last Tuesday pleaded with police and city administrators to ease new gun regulations, which, among other things, now require an essay of anyone applying for an unrestricted firearms license. I will never write an essay to get my rights as an American citizen, resident Dan Gannon reportedly stated at a city council meeting last week, according to the Lowell Sun. Additionally, those applying for permits must submit documentation such as a letter of recommendation, a previous gun license, or a military or law enforcement ID, and are required to take firearms training course. A police spokesman in the town of 110,000 argues the new essay policy is being mischaracterized, but says it will better help vet gun owners. Screw you, pal. I'll say that with capital letters. Here's what he says. If you want a license to carry a firearm unrestricted whenever you want and when wherever you want, the superintendent is just looking for some documentation as to ask why. It's none of your damn business. That's my commentary. And he says that is not an unreasonable to most people. Well, yeah, it is. It's major. I'm an average Joe, and there's a lot of us average Joes out there, and we definitely think it's unreasonable. But a lawyer who fights on behalf of gun owners said that the word essay was the correct term to describe the requirement. An essay when you're in school is when you write something. You turn it in and they grade it. Attorney Richard Chambers told Fox News. This is an essay. And it's also just another layer of bureaucracy that they tacked on to block people from exercising their rights. Gun rights supporters say the town's essay requirement infringes upon the Second Amendment. No, you think? It's absurd that people should have to write an essay to the town to explain why they should be able to exercise their constitutional rights. Gun Owners Action League of Massachusetts Executive Director Jim Wallace said in the statement, "We already have a very strict set of gun laws in the state, but this is way over the top." Critics also complain that $1,100 training course approved by the city is too costly and is intended to discourage residents from applying for the license. It's beyond ridiculous, firearm safety instructor Randy Brenton said, and the price is quoted to the public. In Massachusetts, state law sets guidelines and requirements, but give local chief and police broad direction on implementation, reported Fox News. Ladies and gentlemen, that's just downright ridiculous, outrageous, obnoxious, and WTF to the largest font you can find on your computer. Okay? It's ridiculous. And what's going to happen is it'll happen to you, too, if you let people get carried away with their power trips. So make sure you put them in their place in the sense that, hey, they work for us. We don't want any restrictions. We have the right to carry it. You can't tell me I got to write an essay to go carry a gun. You may be able to tell me if I can carry open or concealed and how to do that, but you can't tell me I got to write an essay for it. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, where time is running out here, time is running out. So with that, I'm going to tell you I enjoyed today. I want to thank everybody here for helping me out, the ladies, and my IT guy here is doing a great job. And I want to say thank you. We had a great time. Keep your powder dry. God bless everybody.